Okay, so chapter 23 is basically the Jewish calendar. Okay, so I've written it, the feasts on the board. Now, I don't know if you noticed, but Purim and Hanukkah are not on here because Purim and Hanukkah happened after Leviticus 23, right? Purim was Esther, so that was not till the exile. Hanukkah is not until the intertestamental period. So they do not have any instructions in Leviticus. Purim, I believe the only instructions are in Esther. Yeah, I don't think it's anywhere else. So, and Hanukkah is obviously not in the Old Testament because that happened after the Old Testament was done. So these are the biblical feasts in Leviticus that Moses, that God revealed to Moses that they were to implement. Okay.
Yesterday a little bit because we went over the story of Esther, and today it's celebrated with the reading of Esther.
Yeah.
They boo at Haman.
Right.
They make cookies in three corners and they're filled with fruit.
Yeah.
We didn't make the cookies because we still have muffins from the baby shop. She got to dress up in princess dresses and pretend she was Queen Esther.
Oh, that's fun. That's fun. Yes. Okay, so this chapter, again, we've been we just finished rules for the priests, right? And we're in the holiness code. So it's all about being holy, being set apart. Okay, so now we get to the feast. And the idea behind the feast is all time is holy. All time is God's time. He sets the agenda and man follows. Okay? This chapter specifically is just for your average person. Okay, it's for your layman, how they were to celebrate these holidays. Numbers 28 and 29, which we'll get to eventually, they list out all the required sacrifices for the priests for all these holidays, okay, so that the priests would know what their job was on to celebrate these. But this chapter is specifically just for your average person, what they were supposed to do, okay? If you notice, so this is the first month of the year. This is the seventh month of the year, okay? I don't remember which that is. Third month of the year. Sivan is the third month of the year. Okay, so you start with Passover. Passover, unleavened bread, and Passover is one day. Right here, we have the 14th of the first month of the year. Then for the next week, you have unleavened bread. So these, in our minds, go together. And in the middle of this, you have first fruits. You offer your first fruit offering. So all three of these, they have three different sets of instructions, kind of, but it's really all at the same time. Okay, Pentecost is 50 days later, and then you have three in month seven. Okay, Feast of Trumpets is on the first day, Day of Atonement 10th day, and then Tabernacles or Booths is for a week later in the month. Okay, it corresponds to their agricultural calendar as well. Okay, so this is during the barley harvest, this is during the wheat harvest, and then you have your grape, figs, and olives in the end of the month. So by the end of the seventh month, you're basically done with your harvest and ready for winter time. Okay, these are our corresponding months of the year. Okay, so this is like March, April, May, June-ish, September, October-ish. Okay, and then you have your winter. If it was a good year for rain typically went from October to March. Okay, and Israel, as you know, desperately needed the rain. Very dry, arid land. And so if they obeyed, God promised to send the rain. If they disobeyed, God promised to not. Yes?
Which one is the seventh month, Sivan?
Tishri. So the third month. Okay, so this, we'll get into it. But this, Pentecost, is 50 days after this feast. Okay, so about 2 months later. So this is the first, so that's the third-ish month. And then this is the seventh month. Okay, and we will we'll touch each of them. Oh, yes. The stars, these were the three feasts that all males had to go to Jerusalem. So these were your feasts. So of unleavened bread, you didn't necessarily have to be there for Passover day. Okay, remember Passover is just one day, but you had to be there at least by the next day. So probably most people were here by Passover as well. Okay, and then Pentecost, and then Booths. Okay, Pentecost, this is the only one you had to travel for that was only one day long. Okay, unleavened bread and Booths are both a week celebration. Okay, Pentecost was the only feast that you had to be there for just one day. Now,
so day is number of days, like the total length?
No, no, no. So this is the day of the month. So Passover is on the 14th of Nisan.
Okay.
Then the 15th through the 21st, so that's 7 days, right, is unleavened bread. Okay, 15th through 21st of Tishri, which is the seventh month, is tabernacle. And then, as you can see, Pentecost is just one day. It's just the 16th. No, sorry, the 6th of Sivan. Okay, other questions about this before we get?
Men had to be there.
Yes.
Just the men.
Yes, well, we can go there right now. Let's go to Deuteronomy 16. Can someone read for me Deuteronomy 16, 16?
Three times a year, and all your males shall appear before the Lord your God in the place which he chooses, at the feast of unleavened bread, and at the feast of weeks, and at the feast of booths, and they shall not appear before the Lord empty-handed.
Okay, so specifically all males. That doesn't mean that the females couldn't go, but, you know, somebody had to stay back and tend the farm. You're not going to empty the entire land, right? And I'm sure males probably meant, you know, 13 and over. You know, I'm sure your little boys didn't have to go. For 3 times a year, they had to travel to, it says in Deuteronomy, the place God chooses, which then is Jerusalem, okay? And this is exactly why Jeroboam, in the divided kingdom, set up his own places of worship in the north, because he was afraid if all his people 3 times a year went down to Jerusalem, he was afraid he was going to lose the kingdom. Which, ironically, God says the exact opposite would have happened. If he had obeyed, God would have established Jeroboam and his line as king. Instead, he disobeys. He creates golden calves, actually, which clearly didn't know his history or didn't pay attention to his history, right? Because that's never a good idea. And so then in the north, you get this line of kings and that line of kings, and it's just all over the place. Okay.
He studied it out, but do you think that's more of a pride thing? He wanted people to stay in his country?
Right. Well, I mean, he was exactly. He wanted to be king, and so he was afraid if he let people go down to Jerusalem that then they would want to be reunited with Judah, and then God had chosen David. And his line is king. Well, Jeroboam is not in the line of David. And so then he would have lost, he thinks he would have lost his kingship. Okay. Which, I mean, from a man's point of view, it totally makes sense. That totally makes sense. You don't want your people having to have their worship center in your enemy's country. Okay. All right. So. Okay, so the idea, too, again, to reiterate, is God sets the calendar. He tells you where to be and when, and he tells you how to do it. So your time is God's time. Everything is holy, right? There's no moment in your life that is not holy, and the feasts were to help you remember that. Okay, that after basically every harvest, you had some sort of feast or festival or celebration that you were then to take time away and to celebrate. And there's no moment in your life that is not holy. Okay? Because remember, Israel was to be a holy nation, right? Set apart. And remember, this is part of the holiness code. So we have in Leviticus, we have all the sacrifices and all the details how to do that. Then you get Nadab and Abihu. Then you get the clean unclean, right? To figure out, now we've defiled the tabernacle on day one of our system, so now we need to know what's clean and unclean, right? Then you have Day of Atonement, and then you get holiness. Because the priests, that's what they were to do, differentiate between clean and clean and between the holy and the profane. Okay, so now we're getting the holiness code so they know what is holy and then what is not. So part of what's holy is your time as well. You don't get to determine your time, God does. Okay, and God tells you where to be and when. Can someone read for me Leviticus 23, verse 1 through 8?
The Lord spoke to Moses, "Speak to the Israelites and tell them, these are my appointed times, the times of the Lord that you will proclaim as sacred assemblies. Work may be done for 6 days, but on the seventh day there must be a Sabbath of complete rest, a sacred assembly. You are not to do any work. It is the Sabbath to the Lord wherever you live. These are the Lord's appointed times, the sacred assemblies you are to proclaim at the appointed times. Passover to the Lord comes in the first month, at twilight on the 14th day of the month. The festival of unleavened bread to the Lord is on the 15th day of the same month.
For 7 days you must eat unleavened bread. On the first day you are to hold a sacred assembly. You are not to do any daily work. You are to be present. You are to present a fire offering to the Lord for 7 days. On the seventh day there will be a sacred assembly. You must not do any daily work.
Okay. So, verse 1 and 2, Lord speaking to Moses, right? Speak to the sons of Israel. Okay, so this is for everyone. This is not just priests. This is everyone, you know, everyone needs to know how to celebrate these days. Okay, and say to them, the Lord's appointed times, which you shall proclaim as holy convocations. Okay, appointed times, the root of this word in Hebrew is also the root of our tent of meeting. Okay, so it's God is saying, this is how you meet with me. And the tent of meeting is where God appoints, says, this is where you meet me, is in the tent of meeting. So these appointed times are how you meet God. And for 3 times a year, you meet him where you're supposed to meet God, at the tent of meeting or in Jerusalem. Okay? So he has appointed a place where he will meet with his people. Now he is appointing the times where he will specifically meet with his people. Okay? Holy convocations, or you had a different translation. What did holy assembly or something like that?
Sacred assembly.
Okay, so holy convocation, sacred assembly. That word for convocation or assembly literally means to call or a summons. So it's a holy summons, a holy call. God is calling you to gather. These were national gatherings for public worship. Okay, these feasts gave Israel the opportunity to renew their allegiance to God, and it also helped promote national unity. Okay, because once they're in the land, right, they're not all in one massive camp, you know, wandering around the wilderness. Now they're spread out much more through all of Israel and also Transjordan. Right, you have people across the Jordan River, and their concern is that they would be forgotten and not be considered part of Israel anymore, okay, because they're on the wrong side of the Jordan River. Well, this would have helped with that, because every year, everybody, all the males, come and they gather in one spot to worship God. Okay? Okay, the feasts where all the men don't have to go to Jerusalem, trumpets, Day of Atonement, and I guess really just Passover if you didn't make it in time, you were to still celebrate in your town in a certain way, okay? You are still supposed to celebrate. It's just not everyone had to go to Jerusalem to do it. So the celebrations were to be nationwide, not just in Jerusalem. Yes?
What if the poor didn't have the money to travel?
Well, they needed to figure out a way to get there. Yeah. I don't know, yeah. That's a good question, but they were to be there as well. Mm-hmm. Yep. It doesn't seem like there's ever any exemption for... Now, so... While studying this, I read a book, part of a book. It's called To Be a Jew, and it's written by a Jewish rabbi, and he talks about how this is all celebrated today, how the Jews still celebrate these feasts. So I have some of those details in here. But, oh my goodness, some of the things they have, when we get to Passover and what constitutes leaven, I mean, they have it down to like an exact science. So, and like, Feast of Tabernacles, you were supposed to live in your tabernacle, in your little booth, but they have a ton of exemptions. If you're pregnant, if you're sick, if you're all these different things, then you are exempt. So they probably came up with rules for, you know, if you're on your deathbed, you're not going to make a trip, you know, or whatever. And so I'm sure they had rules for those that didn't have to travel as well. Because the interesting thing is, as I was reading it, it's like, the rabbis were so concerned with following God's law in their own way that they came up with the most minute, you know, they would try to read and draw out every single word, you know, and then they'd take a word and then they would, well, form all these laws and rules around it. And that's why when you get to the Pharisees, Sabbath had turned into this like super burdensome day because you weren't allowed to do these gajillion things, and you had to know what you were allowed to do and not allowed to do. So anyway, but it was just interesting reading even how they celebrate it today and all their exemptions, and you know,
they still love the model.
That is exactly right. Okay, verse 3, For 6 days, work may be done, but on the seventh day, there is a Sabbath of complete rest. Okay, so the very first feast, quote-unquote feast mentioned, which I didn't even write on the board, is Sabbath. Okay, the first appointed time is the weekly Sabbath. This and Sabbath day is the basis and foundation for all the other feasts. Okay, because all the other feasts are going to be quote-unquote Sabbath-like or even Sabbath-light. Okay, we'll get there. But they're going to be treated as Sabbath days. Okay, and all goes back to Sabbath. So Sabbath is the first feast, and that is weekly. Okay, Sabbath was to remind people of God and their covenant with him, and that's on a weekly basis. Then on an annual basis, these feasts were disruptions to the normal flow of life and also reminded Israel that all time is God's time. Okay, so every week they had to acknowledge that God owned their time. And they had no autonomy over themselves. They were not allowed to just do whatever they wanted to do on Sabbath day. They had very specific things they could and could not do. Okay, and then the feasts are going to be interruptions into their yearly life to show them the same thing. Okay, what's interesting is these feasts are also dominated by the number seven. Okay, Sabbath is on the seventh day of the week. We will get there later. It's not in this chapter, but I think it's in chapter 25. Every seventh year was a rest for the land. Okay, they were not to sow their fields every seventh year.
Did they just store up food then?
Yes, God says if they obey it on year six, he will provide them enough food for 3 years, is his promise, if they obey. Okay? Then, after seven sevens of years, okay, so every 49 years, on the 50th year was the year of Jubilee, and all land was supposed to go back to its original owners if it had been sold or whatever. Everything was supposed to return to who God originally gave it to. Okay? Passover is on the 14th day, which is the second seventh of the month. Okay? These two feasts are celebrated for 7 days, unleavened bread and booths. Okay. Pentecost is seven sevens of days after unleavened bread, or 50th. After 49 days, on the 50th day is Pentecost. Okay. And then the seventh month, we have the most feasts. We have three feasts. These kind of all run in, I mean, these are three as well, but these kind of all run into one. These are three very specific, separate feasts. Okay, so on the seventh, and you have your Day of Atonement also in the seventh month, which isn't the reset for the entire system. Okay, so seven is very prominent in, really, in Scripture.
You said month seven. Do they only have 10?
No, they have 12.
They do have 12?
They have 12 months. 12 lunar months, and then every however many years they would add a 13th month in order to catch everything up. Okay. Let's turn to Ezekiel 22. Ezekiel 22. Can someone read for me verse, this is going to be weird, but verse 8, verse 26, and verse 31, because we don't need to read everything between 8 and 31. Ezekiel chapter 22. Verse 8, verse 26, and verse 31.
You have despised my holy things and profaned my Sabbath.
Okay, that's 8, 26.
Your priests have done violence to my law and have profaned my holy things. They have made no distinction between the holy and the profane, and they have not taught the difference between the unclean and the clean, and they hide my eyes from my Sabbaths, and I am profaned among them.
Okay, verse 31.
Thus I have poured out my indignation on them. I have consumed them with the fire of my wrath. Their way I have brought upon their heads, declares the Lord God.
Okay, so one of the reasons that they are in exile, that they are being punished, is because they did not observe Sabbath. They profaned the Sabbath. Even the priests, right, hide their eyes from the Sabbath. They don't even do it. Okay, and they don't do, you notice, they don't do their job. They don't distinguish between holy and profane or clean and unclean. And in Leviticus 10, that's the one time God speaks to just Aaron. And that's what his job was to be. And so the priests weren't doing their job. And so God sends them into exile. But one of the reasons is because they do not keep Sabbath. Okay? All right, so verse 4 through 8, we get Passover and unleavened bread in these verses. Okay, so verse 4, these are the appointed times of the Lord, holy convocations which you shall proclaim at the times appointed for them. Verse 5, first month on the 14th day of the month at twilight is the Lord's Passover. Okay, that's all that chapter 23 says about Passover. It's just that one verse, verse 5. Okay, but we studied Passover in Exodus. Okay, and in Exodus 12, you get all the details of what you're supposed to do with the Passover lamb and what you're supposed to eat, and you're supposed to be dressed, ready to go. So all those details are in Exodus 12. Okay, in verse 5, you notice it says, at twilight, on the 14th day of the month, at twilight is the Lord's Passover. Of course, the Jews have to know, what does at twilight mean? Like, because we need a specific time of day in order to celebrate this. We can't just have a haphazard at twilight and everybody just interpret their own way. So their definition of twilight is between midday and sunset. So we think of twilight like the sun has set, but it's not quite dark yet. That's what we think of as twilight. That's not their definition of twilight, because one of the reasons is you could not sacrifice all the Passover lambs between sunset and dark. There's not enough time. Okay, so they defined it as between midday and sunset. So it, at the time of Christ, Passover lambs started to be sacrificed typically around 3 p.m. And that was then their twilight. And then they would go home and celebrate their Passover feast. Okay? Okay, then so that's on the 14th at twilight. Then verse 6, on the 15th day of the same month, there is the feast of unleavened bread to the Lord for 7 days. You shall eat unleavened bread. Okay, verse 7, on the first day you shall have a holy convocation, you shall not do any laborious work, or Marion's translation said daily work, right? Yeah. Something like that. Okay, so this was a Sabbath-like day, but it wasn't as strict as Sabbath. So you were to rest, but it specifically says no laborious work or no daily work. Okay, so you could still, tradition says, you could still light a fire. You could cook and bake, as long as some of the food you were going to cook and bake, you ate that day. You were not allowed to cook and bake if you were only cooking and baking for the future. Okay? That's what they said. Okay?
Laborious would mean like going out and feed the animals, and then is that laborious?
If it's part of your daily work, maybe. Maybe they would just have to give them enough food the day before to make them through. Okay? But, and you were also allowed to carry things. Remember the man that Jesus healed and says, pick up your pallet and walk? Right? Well, that you were allowed to do on these feast days. So you were allowed to do smaller house chores, smaller quote-unquote work on these feast days. But on Sabbath, if you look back up to verse 3, it says a Sabbath of complete rest. These were things you were not even allowed, you were not supposed to do on a normal Sabbath day. Okay? And if Sabbath happened to fall on one of these days, well, then you had to honor the Sabbath, you know. So if the unleavened bread started, if the 15th was a Saturday, was a Sabbath day, then you would have had to do complete rest, okay? But if, you know, the 15th was a Tuesday, then it was a rest day, but you could still do some small household chores. Okay? The last day of the feast, it says on the seventh day, verse 8, on the seventh day is a holy convocation, you shall not do any laborious work. Okay, so the first day of the feast and the seventh day of the feast, both of them were Sabbath-like days. No work. Verse 8, you shall present an offering by fire to the Lord. This is just shorthand for you are to make all the appropriate sacrifices that were to be made during this time. It's not detailed out here. Okay, it's detailed out in Exodus and also in Numbers. Okay, but they were just they were not to work, and they were to make all the appropriate sacrifices. Okay, so one of the main features of this feast is, if you look at verse 6, it says on the 15th day of the same month, there's the feast of unleavened bread to the Lord. For 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread. Okay, now, if you remember back to Exodus, it says there was not even to be any leaven in your house, right? And you had to get rid of it all. So they had so many rituals. They have so many rituals of how to make sure that you don't have any leaven, and you're not even supposed to own any leaven. So now they have these ways where they sell the leaven they have to a Gentile, Because it can be in their area so long as they don't own it. Okay? And so they sell it to a Gentile with the understanding that they will buy it back for more after Passover is done. Okay? But they have rules that the Gentile can, if he wants, keep it. He is not obligated. There is nothing in the terms that obligates him to sell it back, but there's an understanding, blah, 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 blah. Okay? Also, if you all your stuff that you use to eat, it might be contaminated with leaven. So there's a whole system of cleaning your stove and your oven and your utensils to get rid of all the leaven. Anyways, but leaven, this was what I thought was hilarious. Leaven is defined as wheat, rye, barley, oats, or spelts, so those five grains, has been mixed with water and sat for 18 minutes. If it has sat for 18 minutes, then it has begun the leavening process and is considered leaven, considered yeast. So matzah, if it is kosher Passover matzah, from the time the flour has been mixed with water till it comes out of the oven is less than 18 minutes. How they came up with it, I don't know. But that's their rules. And so if, you know, I don't know if they sell it here. In California, you could buy matzah. But if it is kosher Passover matzah, there's some matzah that's just matzah, but it's not Passover matzah. If it's Passover matzah, then you know that from the time it is mixed with water till the time it comes out of the oven is less than 18 minutes.
Okay.
All right. But the purpose of the unleavened bread was to remind them of the haste with which they left Egypt, right? And so they were to have this time to remember God's salvation of them in Egypt. So how strict they were with leaven and all the rules, like right after Moses gave these laws, I have no idea. But that this is what it has evolved into. Okay. And now with, you know, machines and whatever, the process is much more refined, you know. But even I think back in the day, you had, the Jews were very conscientious of, you know, they did not want to hit that 19th minute. I don't know who came up with the 18 minutes, but anyway. Yeast.
Relation with sin.
Oh.
Because you just said, you know, the whole unleavened bread, you know, to remind them
yep.
of the haste with
yes.
they left Egypt, blah 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 blah. But in the more further
right.
historically one, you know, there was the connection between leaven.
A little leaven leavens the whole lump.
Sin, and then you know, unleavened yeah. is to.
Right. I'm not sure. Is it in the Old Testament, that idea? I don't know. I mean, because the first time I think of that is when Christ says a little leaven leavens the whole lump. And you don't want the leaven of the Pharisees. Right. But I don't know if that idea.
My Bible has a footnote for that verse that points to 1 Corinthians 5:8. And I don't know if that's the leaven, a little leaven leavens the whole lump. But it says the festival was intended to remind the covenant community they're supposed to purge corruption.
And maybe it is just from the idea of Passover that you had to get rid of all the leaven and you ate unleavened bread and you were not allowed to there's only one feast here that we'll talk about that you were allowed to bring leavened bread as an offering. Every time it talks about, when it talked about grain offerings, you remember earlier in Leviticus, you were not allowed to bring leavened bread. It had to be unleavened, just the flour. You could bring a baked good. I don't know if you guys remember.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
chap.
No,
there was a grain offering. Okay, and you could either bring raw flour and oil, or you could bring something baked, but it had to be unleavened. It was just the water, flour, you know, and then you bake it. So I don't know if it stems from that where God did not accept leaven as an offering except for one feast. He does say, and it specifically says, bring two leavened loaves of bread. But other than that, you were not to bring yeasted products. So I'm not sure. That's a great question. Any other questions? Passover and unleavened bread. Okay, can someone read for me verse 9 to 14? This is the Feast of First Fruits.
Then you shall bring in the sheaf of the first fruits of your harvest to the priest.
And ye shall wave the sheaf before the Lord for you to be accepted. On the day after the Sabbath, the priest shall wave it. Now on the day when you wave the sheaf, you shall offer a male lamb 1 year old without defect for a burnt offering to the Lord. Its grain offering shall then be 2/10 of an ephah of fine flour mixed with oil, an offering by fire to the Lord for a soothing aroma, with its libation, 1/4 of a hin of wine. Until this same day, until you have brought in the offering of your Lord, of your God, you shall eat neither bread nor roasted grain nor new growth. It is to be a perpetual statute throughout your generations in all your dwelling places.
Okay. So this is first fruits, and notice it's when you enter the land, right? Because when you're wandering in the wilderness, you're not farming anything, you're not growing anything, so you don't really have the first fruits of your harvest to bring in, okay? So this would not start until they come into the land, okay? Verse 11, he shall wave the sheaf before the Lord for you to be accepted on the day after the Sabbath. This is the controversy. Which Sabbath, and what are you talking about? Which day is this? So there are two views. Okay. The first one says that this means the day after the Sabbath means Sunday, Sabbath, Saturday, after the Sabbath during unleavened bread week. Okay. So this spans a week, right? So there's going to be a Saturday in there somewhere. Okay. So wherever that Saturday falls, if it's the 15th, 16th, whatever, on the next day on Sunday, then you were supposed to bring your first fruit offering. So it fell within this week, but it was different every year. Okay. The other view is that the day after Sabbath, because the first day of unleavened bread, the 15th, was treated like a Sabbath day. Therefore, the day after the Sabbath was always the 16th. Okay. The Orthodox Jews take that view, that it's always the 16th because 15th, where regardless of what day of the week it falls on, is treated like a Sabbath day. Therefore, the day after the Sabbath is the 16th. In my To Be a Jew book that I read, it seems like they still do it that way today if you're celebrating this. Okay, it's the 16th. Both my commentaries seem to think that that was wrong, that it should be always on a Sunday and always the Sunday after the whatever Saturday falls within here. Okay, so I don't know what the Jews did, but my commentators are both Gentiles, though, in the To Be a Jew book, which is written by a rabbi, said the 16th. So I don't know. I don't know which one is the right view, but at least today they think it's the 16th, the Jews do. Most of the Jews. There's different sects of Jews, and they believe different things, but they think it's the 16th. So regardless, it's sometime, regardless of which view you take, it's sometime during this week of unleavened bread, you're also doing this first fruits offering. Okay, so it's kind of a separate feast, but kind of not. It just rolls into the unleavened bread week. Okay? So verse 10 says, when you enter the land, you shall bring in the sheaf of the first fruits of your harvest. Okay, so this is going to be the barley harvest. That's what's harvested at this time of year, which is March and April. Okay? And you are to offer it to the Lord. This sheaf represents the entire harvest and acknowledges that it all comes from God. So I assume that if you are traveling for this feast, right, you got to bring this with you. Because you are to, you know, if you're up in Galilee, you need to have harvested your grain probably before this week and then travel down and bring the first fruits to offer to the Lord, either on the 16th or whatever day of the week you were supposed to do it. Okay, verse 12 through 13, there were other sacrifices that were offered as well. A 1-year-old lamb and a grain offering. Notice the grain offering is 2/10 of an ephah of fine flour. I don't know if you remember, but a typical grain offering was only 1/10 of an ephah of fine flour. So this is double. Okay, but it's double what is typically offered. Okay, and so you had a burnt offering, a grain offering, and a drink offering, along with your sheaf wave offering. And my assumption is that then that sheaf is given to the priests, and then they can use it for their own food. Okay. Verse 14, Until this same day, until you have brought in the offering of your God, you shall eat neither bread nor roasted grain nor new growth. Okay, so until God had received his portion of your harvest, you were not to eat of that harvest. Okay, so if you live up in Galilee and the week before you had harvested the grain, no one was to eat of it until the man had gone down to Jerusalem and offered the sheaf of the first, you know, the first parts of your harvest belong to God. Now, once God has his portion, now you can eat of your harvest. Okay? Okay, so this was also to remind Israel that God owned the land. Okay? And anything they receive is his blessing and is a gift from him. So you need to make sure that you give back to God before you even enjoy any of it yourself. Okay? Because it all belongs to God anyway. Questions about first fruits? Okay, can someone read for me verse 15 to 22?
You shall count 7 full weeks from the day after the Sabbath, from the day that you brought the sheaf of the wave offering. You shall count 50 days to the day after the seventh Sabbath. Then you shall present a grain offering of new grain to the Lord. You shall bring from your dwelling places 2 loaves of bread to be waved and made of 2/10 of an ephah. They shall be of fine flour, and they shall be baked with leaven as first fruits to the Lord. And you shall present with the bread 7 lambs a year old without blemish, and 1 bull from the herd, and 2 rams. They shall be a burnt offering to the Lord with their grain offerings and their drink offerings, a food offering with a pleasing aroma to the Lord. And you shall offer 1 male goat for a sin offering, and 2 male lambs a year old as a sacrifice of peace offering. And the priest shall wave them with the bread of the first fruits as a wave offering before the Lord with the 2 lambs. They shall be holy to the Lord for the priest, and you shall make proclamation on the same day. You shall hold a holy convocation. You shall not do any ordinary work. It is a statute forever in all your dwelling places throughout your generations. And when you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not reap your field right up to its edge, nor shall you gather the gleanings after your harvest. You shall leave them for the poor and for the sojourner. I am the Lord your God.
Okay, so verse 15, you shall count for yourselves from the day after the Sabbath, from the day when you brought in the sheaf of the wave offering. There shall be 7 complete Sabbaths. You shall count 50 days. Okay, so Feast of Pentecost or Feast of Weeks, it's sometimes called Feast of Weeks, okay, is 50 days after your first fruits offering. Okay, so you can only have an exact date, like Sivan 6, if your first fruits offering is on an exact date. If your first fruits offering is floating, like on a Sunday somewhere in this week, okay, then this day is also going to be floating. Okay. But you are to count 50 days. So seven weeks. Yeah, 7 weeks or 49 days. And then on the 50th day was the day of Pentecost.
You said in your book that they still celebrate it today as with all the dates.
Yes.
Kind of like that. Where do they bring all of it to? All
their- They don't celebrate it with their, they're not going to be able to celebrate it like this. So they don't celebrate it with sacrifices.
How do they celebrate it?
They just have traditions and they have blessings that they say. And I mean, because they certainly don't all travel to Jerusalem. So they don't do that either. Exactly. If all the Jews from around the world went to Jerusalem 3 times a year. So they just have traditions that they do. So they have things that they say. They have certain ways that they eat their meals. The counting of the 50 days, you are supposed to say a blessing and count every day. And if you forget, then there are certain ways that you can either make up for it and remember, or you just miss it altogether. But you're supposed to, there is an even a ritual in the counting, because it says in verse 15, you shall count for yourselves. So they take that and they make it where I don't remember, I didn't write it down, but it's like a specific meal of the day. You are supposed to say, this is the first day after, you know, and you're supposed to say a blessing, and they have a ritual blessing that you're supposed to say. So, yes. Yeah. Okay? But Okay, Pentecost comes from the Greek word meaning 50th, which you can hear that, the penta, you know, pentagon, five. So Pentecost just means the 50th, okay? So that, and that's a Greek word, Pentecost. So you're not going to find Pentecost in the Old Testament because it's Greek, okay? So it was called the Feast of Weeks, but we know it better as Pentecost from the New Testament. Okay, so this is, again, this is the only pilgrimage feast that was just one day. So everyone was to come, all the men were to come, but it was only one day long. This feast, I don't think it says it in here, but this is the, it celebrates the harvest of the wheat and is a celebration of the giving of the Torah. Okay, where God, when God gave the Torah at Mount Sinai. That's what this feast came to be. So it was, again, so first fruits was you offered the first fruits of your barley harvest. Feast of Weeks, you're offering the first fruits of your wheat harvest. Okay, so similar ideas, but different harvest. Okay, and also a celebration of the giving of the Torah. Well, I don't know if it started later, but there's nothing in here that says that that's what the reason for this celebration. There really isn't a reason, right? You're just supposed to bring new grain. And this is, I believe this is the one where you can bring leavened loaves. Yes, you're allowed to bring leavened loaves here. If you look at verse 17, it says, "You shall bring in from your dwelling place two loaves of bread for a wave offering made of 2/10 of an ephah. They shall be a fine flour baked with leaven as first fruits to the Lord." So I'm not sure, because there is nothing in at least Leviticus that says that this is a celebration of the law, of the giving of the law. But my Jewish book says that that's what at least it is today. So when that came about, that correlation came about, I'm not sure. But my Jewish book, he said, the purpose of the counting, right, 50 days, appears to connect the festival of Passover with the festival of weeks, okay? To impress upon us that the release from physical bondage and the political freedom that is represented by Passover does not constitute complete freedom unless it culminates in the spiritual restraints, disciplines, and duties represented by weeks, which celebrates the giving of the Ten Commandments, God's revelation to Israel, and Israel's acceptance of the Torah. So the Jews, because, I mean, they are correlated in the Bible. It's 50 days after. And so they say Passover, you know, represents our political freedom, right? But then we need to be restrained by God's law. And so weeks is God giving us of the law. And then, so that's how we have complete freedom, is political freedom, but also under God's law. Okay? So again, everyone was to bring two loaves of leavened bread for a wave offering. And then along with that, there were seven lambs, a bull, and two rams for a burnt offering. There was also a sin offering and two lambs as a peace offering. Okay, so there's a ton. And now this is not everybody, right? It's not like everybody brings two loaves and seven lambs and a bull and two rams. Okay, so everyone brought the two loaves of bread. So that's a ton of bread. And then the priests would have, or somehow, I don't know how they did it, the system, the priests would have provided all the other as offerings to the Lord. Okay, so these were very generous offerings because the harvest had been gathered in. Okay, again, it was a Sabbath-like day, no laborious work. 21, you shall do no laborious work. Okay, so, yes.
You said not everybody does that, brings in the male lambs and the...
Yes, I don't believe so.
Who does it?
I'm saying you're, like, okay, so you're traveling from Galilee. Right, you have to bring two loaves of bread. You don't have to bring two loaves of bread, seven lambs, a bull, two rams, plus a sin offering, plus two lambs for a peace offering.
I'm thinking more of the locals have to do that.
No, I don't know, because if we go to Numbers, what is it? Numbers. Let's see if I can find this quick. 28. And this is Feast of Weeks. No, where was it? Oh, brother, I'm not going to be able to find it. Yeah. Oh, here. Verse 26. Also on the, Numbers 28, verse 26. Also on the day of the first fruits, when you present a new grain offering to the Lord in your feast of weeks, you shall have a holy convocation. You shall do no laborious work. You shall offer a burnt offering, right? Soothing aroma to the Lord. Two young bulls, one ram, seven male lambs, 1 year old, and their grain offering. Okay. Also one, verse 30, also one male goat to make atonement for you besides the continual burnt offering. So what I'm saying is, this is for the priests for all of Israel. So all those other animals, it's not like every single person had to bring all those other animals. Does that make sense? They were just part of the sacrifices that were offered by the priests on that day. Every person's responsibility was two loaves of leavened bread.
So it shouldn't be along with the bread you shall present.
Right.
The priests shall present.
Yes. I mean, you as in the collective you of all of Israel.
Yeah. Say total, not
right. Times. Right. Yes. Yes. Okay. Good. Other questions? Oh, also one more thing. Verse 22. When you reap the harvest of your land, moreover, you shall not reap to the very corners of your fields. This has already occurred elsewhere in Leviticus. We've talked about remembering the poor, but this was a special time to remember the poor, okay, because you just had your big wheat harvest, so you need to make sure that during your wheat harvest, you're taking care of the poor as well. Your sacrifices, those two loaves of bread that you bring to the altar and plus all the other sacrifices you bring throughout the year, that is how the priests are provided for. Okay, but then you also need to remember the poor and how to provide for the poor. And the way God has set that up is that you don't harvest the edges of your field. Okay, so everyone is taken care of in God's economy, the priests and the poor as well. Okay, questions? Pentecost or Feast of Weeks. All right, can someone read for me just verses 23 to 25?
But you shall present an offering by fire to the Lord.
Okay, so this is the Feast of Trumpets, or you might have actually heard the Jewish name, Rosh Hashanah. Has anyone heard that? Mm-hmm. Okay, Rosh Hashanah is actually New Year's Day. That's what it means. It's New Year's. Okay, but you're like, this is the seventh month. That's not New Year's Day. Okay, but that's what it came to be known as, Rosh Hashanah, New Year's Day. So in the seventh month, we have three feasts. Okay, the first is on the first of the month, the 10th of the month, and then the 15th through the 21st. Okay, in the seventh month, it's the end of the summer. Okay, and they're anticipating the rain. And like I said before, if it's a good year, rain would come between October and March. And so the seventh month is September, October-ish. So the rain should start probably somewhere in the seventh month. Okay. So really, this is kind of the end of the agricultural year and the beginning of a new one. You know, we've brought the harvest in, the final, you know, grape, fig, and olive harvests, and now we're ready for the rains to prepare for a new year of harvests. Okay? In the seventh month, you actually get four additional Sabbath days, Sabbath-like days. Okay? You have all your normal Sabbaths, but you also have 1 day for trumpets, 1 day for Day of Atonement, and 2 days in your booths, Feast of Tabernacles, the beginning and the end. Okay? Okay, so the Feast of Trumpets was celebrated on the first day of the month, and this came to mark the new year. Okay, tradition says creation started on the first day of the seventh month. Okay? tradition, right? I mean, we have no idea, but that's what tradition says. The Mishnah, which is the Jewish oral tradition that has now been written down, they say there are actually four New Year's days, okay? And they all relate to different things. So there's the first of Nisan, which is the first day of the first month. This starts the cycle of the feasts. So that makes Passover the first feast of the new year. Okay. Also, the kings would mark their reigns by the first day of the first month. So if they started their reign in month 12, that's year one. By the first of the first month, now they're in year two. Okay. So they didn't mark it by like complete 12-month cycles. So that's why Kings and Chronicles can be very confusing, okay? Because even if they started at the very end of the prior year, by the first month, the first day of the first month, now in they're in their second year of reign. Does that make sense? Okay? The first of Tishri, which is the seventh month, this became the new year for years. So the Sabbath year and the Jubilee year were marked from this day. Okay, so you would count your 7 years from the seventh month and your 49, 50 years from the seventh month. Okay, then there's the first of Elul, E-L-U-L, that's the sixth month. That was the new year for tithing of animals. I guess if your animals were born before or after that, depended on how much you had to give, okay? So you'd count, you know, I guess how many you got and then tithe them. And then the 15th of Shavat, which is the 11th month, is the new year for trees. I can only assume, if you remember, when you had a new fruit tree, you were not to eat of it for the first 3 years. The fourth year, the fruit all you had to give to God. And then the fifth year, you could eat of it. So, well, the Jews, they got to know when the year is, right, and how to count it. So that's the new year for trees. So they had four different new years. But anyways, it doesn't matter. Okay, so trumpets, the Feast of Trumpets started the 10-day period between trumpets and Day of Atonement, right? First to the 10th. These came to be known as the 10 days of repentance. Okay, it was a time of spiritual self-examination and repentance, which ends on Yom Kippur, or the Day of Atonement. Okay, and 10 days of repentance? Mm-hmm. Intensive prayer is the central mood of this day, and it acknowledges God's sovereignty over the world and his rulership over mankind. Okay? Blowing of the shofar, right, which is the ram's horn, which is what their trumpets were, right? They didn't have brass trumpets. Marks this day, and people are to listen, and they go so far as today, if you can't make it to synagogue to hear someone blow the shofar, you're supposed to hire someone yourself so that you can hear the trumpet blown on the Feast of Trumpets. Okay? And people are to listen. My Jewish book said, the sound of the shofar has been regarded from time immemorial as a call to penitence and as a reminder of the shofar sound at Sinai. Okay? So this feast kind of just is a preparation feast to begin, to set you in the mood for Day of Atonement, is the idea. And in Leviticus, we have hardly anything about it. It just says it's a day of rest, okay, and to blow trumpets. Right, that's basically all it says. Questions? Trumpets, Rosh Hashanah. Yeah. I mean, and I think a long time ago, Michelle did a whole Bible study through the feasts. And so if you really study deeply into, there's a lot of symbolism and stuff, but I didn't have time to do all that. So
right.
Right.
If anyone is interested, I listened to him fairly recently, the radio people at reviveourhearts.com. Sometime, I can't remember exactly which month, since January, they had a whole, I think it was the end of January, it started a whole series, I think of seven talks.
Okay, on the feast.
They were pretty good. I mean, yeah. There was only one thing I went back, but most of it was really good. and that she did like one on each feast, and she would tie it all together with other scripture, but then also into Christ.
Right,
and it was
really
good. There. So if anyone wanted any more in depth of that, just all podcasts online.
Okay.
I listen as I wash the dishes or do my biking at the gym or whatever. You know,
right.
Sometimes.
Yeah, good. Good. All right. Any other questions? Okay, can someone read for me verses 26 to 32, Day of Atonement?
Then the Lord spoke to Moses. The 10th day of the 7th month is the Day of Atonement. You are to hold a sacred assembly and practice self-denial. You are to present a fire offering to the Lord. On this particular day, you are not to do any work, for it is a Day of Atonement to make atonement for yourselves before the Lord your God. If any person does not practice self-denial on this particular day, he must be cut off from his people. I will destroy among his people anyone who does any work on this same day. You are not to do any work. This is a permanent statute throughout your generations wherever you live. It will be a Sabbath of complete rest for you, and you must practice self-denial. You are to observe Sabbath from the evening of the 9th day of the month until the following evening. How far?
That's it, to 32. Okay, so this is Day of Atonement, 10th day of the 7th month. Okay, and these are the instructions of how a layman was to celebrate. So this would have been all throughout Israel because, again, you didn't have to be in Jerusalem to celebrate Day of Atonement. Okay, so the priests, we already figured out how they celebrate Day of Atonement, right? Aaron has his whole, puts on his special white clothes. He offers the sacrifices. He takes the blood in, offers the sacrifice for the people, takes the blood in, you know, lets the scapegoat go. But your average Joe Schmo in Galilee is not going to see any of that or do any of that. So this is how he was to celebrate Day of Atonement. Okay? Three times it talks about humbling yourself. Or what is your verse?
Practice self-denial.
Okay, you shall humble your souls, verse 27. Verse 29, there's a threat if you don't humble yourself. And verse 32, you're to humble yourself. Okay, so this became, what it became was a complete fast from eating and drinking. Okay, you were to not eat or drink. And so then, of course, because it's a complete fast, there's a whole gajillion exceptions of who doesn't have to do it. Okay, but that's what it became, was a complete fast. Oral tradition also said you couldn't wash or bathe, you couldn't anoint your body with oil, you couldn't wear shoes of leather. I guess other shoes were fine, but not of leather. And you weren't allowed to have sex. So that's what, I mean, it's just one day, but, okay? Now, this was a Sabbath of complete rest, no work at all, okay? So this would have been like your normal Sabbath. So you were not to light a fire. I mean, you weren't even going to eat, so there's no point. I mean, you don't need to cook. I guess you need to provide for your kids. But you were not to do any sort of work on this day, okay? If you don't humble yourself, you are cut off. And if you work, you are destroyed. Okay, so this was a very solemn day. And God says you are to observe it. Okay, the day before Yom Kippur became the day of preparation. You were to give money to charity. You were to reconcile with others. Jewish tradition says, and this is not true, but this is what Jewish tradition says, God does not forgive unless the grieved party has first forgiven. So they say on Day of Atonement, you are not forgiven for your sins if you have a problem with someone and they haven't forgiven you first. So the day before the Day of Atonement was the deadline. You had to reconcile and receive the forgiveness of the person you had wronged. Otherwise, on the Day of Atonement, your sin would not be forgiven. Okay? Not true. But then also, basically, if somebody sinned against you, you were basically obligated to forgive. If you did not forgive, then you were viewed as the worst of the worst and the most evil. So you were not supposed to withhold forgiveness, but you also, there was a deadline of when you were to reconcile with someone. Okay, they also had a big feast on the day before Day of Atonement. And it was a festive meal, but you were not to eat too much, right? You're not to gorge yourself because you're not going to eat for the next day. You're also not to eat anything too salty that would make you want to drink too much, because the fast is eating and drinking. So you are not to drink either. Okay. It says in verse 32, from evening until evening you shall keep your Sabbath. Okay, so the Jews, of course, have to know what evening until evening means. So tradition says the fast starts on the ninth day before sundown and goes until the tenth day at nightfall when the stars appear. Okay, so just before sundown till the next day when the stars appear. So it's approximately about 25 hours. Typically, that's when this, and the time was to be spent in prayer. Okay, the idea is that you are to be penitent and repenting of your sins, and the day is supposed to be spent in prayer, your day of fasting.
When did that fasting thing
start?
Yeah, well,
that's how they interpret humble your souls or afflict yourselves. I don't know. I don't know. But see, I mean, well, and you can see why, you can kind of understand why the Jews are the way they are. Because they're like, I want to follow this Day of Atonement. It says humble your souls. What in the world does that mean? How do I do that? You know, and so that is how they have come up with what they've come up with. And I don't know, you know, and the thing is too, oral tradition, we kind of were like, you know, but at the time of Moses, you know, Moses wrote this down, but it is possible that on Day of Atonement, the people are like, what do we do? And Moses says something fast. I don't know. I'm just saying it's possible, right? But it's not written in scripture because God determined we don't need to know those specific details. Well, and so that's what then gets passed down through oral tradition now. Right. Exactly. Exactly. Well, yeah, exactly. And you have the years when it's like, oh, we found this scroll back in the back room. What is it? Oh, it's the law, you know? So
and what got, right. Oral tradition in individual families.
Right.
Something that did maybe start early and only individual families had an oral tradition said that we always
do it this way. Yeah. Yeah. Right. So, I mean, and obviously oral tradition is not infallible. It is very fallible.
Right.
But it might give us some hints of how things were done even early on. But we know that what God has given us is what we need to know. So, but you can also understand why the Jews, a little bit, why they are the way they are, because they if you're going to actually follow this system and the model, you need to know all the itty-bitty details of how to obey. Yeah. All right, Day of Atonement questions. All right. Oh, man. Okay, we'll try to finish. 33 to 44. Can someone read for that? Feast of Tabernacles.
And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the sons of Israel, saying, on the 15th day of the seventh month is the Feast of Booths, the 7 days for the Lord. On the first day is a holy convocation. You shall do no laborious work of any kind. For 7 days you shall present an offering by fire to the Lord. On the eighth day you shall have a holy convocation and present an offering by fire to the Lord. It is an assembly. You shall do no laborious work. These are the appointed times of the Lord, which you shall perform the holy convocations to present offerings by fire to the Lord, burnt offerings and grain offerings, sacrifices and libations, each day's matter on its own day, besides those of the Sabbaths of the Lord, and besides your gifts, and besides all your votive and free will offerings, which you give to the Lord. On exactly the 15th day of the seventh month, when you have gathered in the crops of the land, you shall celebrate the feast of the Lord for 7 days, with a rest on the first day and a rest on the eighth day. Now, on the first day, you shall take for yourselves the foliage of beautiful trees, palm branches and boughs of leafy trees and willows of the brook, and you shall rejoice before the Lord your God for 7 days. You shall thus celebrate it as a feast to the Lord for 7 days in the year. It shall be a perpetual statute throughout your generations. You shall celebrate it in the seventh month. You shall live in booths for 7 days. And all the native born in Israel shall live in booths, so that your generations may know that I had the sons of Israel live in booths when I brought them out of the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. So Moses declared to the sons of Israel the appointed times of the Lord.
Okay, so the 15th day of the seventh month, right, is the Feast of Tabernacles or the Feast of Booths, and it lasts a week. Okay? The first day and the eighth day are to be Sabbath-like days. So the first day of the week and then the day after the week has ended. So it's kind of like the feast is almost 8 days long instead of just seven. But the first day and the eighth day. Offerings were made to be made every day of the feast. Verse 37, to present offerings by fire. If you look at Numbers 29, we don't have time to go there, but Numbers 29, 12 through 38 lists the offerings, and they're massive. Every single day, there are offerings to be offered, and it's a ton of stuff. Okay, Numbers 29, 12 through 38. But it's burnt every day. Burnt offerings, grain offerings, sin offerings, and drink offerings. Okay. And it's, I can't remember what the number starts. Oh, I think 14. On the first day, it's like 14 bowls. On the second day, it's 13. The next day, it's 12, 11, 10, until the last day is 7. Okay, so something like that. So it's a lot of animals on this feast. This is to be, I believe Josephus, maybe I have it somewhere. Yeah, Josephus claimed that the Feast of Booths was the preeminent ancient Israelite celebration. So this was like the last one of the year, and it was the Christmas to the nth degree. I mean, not giving of gifts, but it was the most joyous celebration that there was. Okay. Okay. Verse 39 to 44, really the most distinctive feature of this feast is that you constructed a booth to live in. Okay. On the first day you gather all these branches, right? The palm branches, boughs of leafy trees, willows. And the assumption is that you probably use it to build your booth with. Nowadays, there's all kinds of rules on what constitutes a booth and which doesn't, okay? But not in Scripture. The feast was to commemorate the wilderness wanderings. Now, notice, this is given before the 40 years of wilderness wanderings, but it is still to commemorate God taking them out of Egypt, right? And they have been wandering in the wilderness at least for a short period of time by this point. Okay, living in temporary shelters. So when the feast was originated, that's what it commemorated, coming out of Egypt, living in tents and booths, okay? It came to represent all 40 years of wanderings, okay? But the 40 years of wanderings haven't happened at this point in Leviticus. We haven't got there yet, not till Numbers, okay? Dwelling in booths shows or emphasizes trust in God's protection and provision. Nowadays, if you construct a booth, it does not count as a booth if the roof can keep the rain out. Okay? It has to allow the rain in if it rains. And remember, this is when the rain's supposed to start in Israel. That's just their rules. So if it rains, you're allowed to sleep inside. But they say, that's what the book said, if your roof of the booth keeps the rain out, it does not count as a booth.
I feel like this is a bunch of contradictions.
Well, because I mean, the idea is supposed to be, I think, it's just supposed to be a temporary shelter that's put up quickly, that's not solid, and whatever.
So
but
the tent count?
What'd you say?
If it commemorates the wilderness wanderings, I'm sure they had their tent set up so they didn't rain.
Yes. Yes, Joyce. But remember, this also becomes as tradition, as fun ways to celebrate this holiday. Nowadays, like, all the kids decorate them. I mean, it's this big to-do, and the whole family gets involved, and it's supposed to be a bunch of fun. This is supposed to be the joyous last celebration of the year, so, yes. Says Joyce, who has an out. Not even an outhouse, just an out. All right. Some people don't think that's fun. Okay, so this is after the final harvest. And so thankfulness and gratefulness to the Lord is naturally forthcoming. So this is kind of like our Thanksgiving holiday, except it's a week long, not just a day. Okay. Verse 40 commands you to rejoice. End of verse 40, rejoice before the Lord your God for 7 days. So there, it was a happy, joyous celebration with much singing and dancing. Okay. Then where does it say? Where is it? Did I write it down? No. Okay, sorry. Back to verse 36. It says, for 7 days you shall present an offering by fire to the Lord. On the eighth day you shall have a holy convocation and present an offering by fire to the Lord. It is an assembly. You shall do no laborious work. Okay? So the first day, no work. Verse 35. The eighth day, no work. No laborious work. Okay? So you could still cook and all that stuff. So this eighth day became to be called the eighth day of solemn assembly. I mean, because that's what I think it says. Right, it is an assembly. So the eighth day of solemn assembly. This is when you would leave your temporary booth and you would go back home. You would return home.
On day eight.
On day eight. Yep, presumably in the morning. Okay. And it came to be that this was the day that the annual cycle of the weekly Torah reading is completed. Okay, so in the synagogues, they read a portion of the Torah every week or every day. And this is when you would have made it through the entire Torah in a year, is on this day. Okay, and I believe that this tradition comes from Deuteronomy. I'm not sure, but I think this is where it comes from. Deuteronomy 31. Can someone read? Well, I'll just read it. Deuteronomy 31:10-13 says, then Moses commanded them, saying, at the end of every 7 years, at the time of the year of remission of debts, at the Feast of Booths, when all of Israel comes to appear before the Lord your God at the place which he will choose, you shall read this law in front of all Israel in their hearing. As assemble the people, the men and the women and the children and the alien who is in your town, so that they may hear and learn and fear the Lord your God and be careful to observe all the words of his law. Their children who have not known will hear and learn to fear the Lord your God as long as you live on the land which you are about to cross the Jordan to possess. Okay, so Moses commanded them that every 7 years at the Feast of Booths, you were to read the law, the whole law. So my guess is then they took that and they spread it out so it's read every year in the synagogues. And then on the eighth day was the day when the yearly reading of the Torah would have been completed. And then this was a big party day. Okay. So you would go to synagogue. They would march around the synagogue seven times carrying the Torah and there would be singing and dancing and it would be a big party.
And then the next 5 months they didn't read.
No, they would have no, they would have started over again. So the yearly would have started here. Well, ended here and then started and then ended here. And yeah.
They didn't start like it.
No, correct. Correct. Well, that remember they have four New Year's days. So.
Oh, right.
So anything can be a New Year's day. So maybe this is the New Year's for the reading of the Torah. Okay. This was also called, the celebration was called the Rejoicing of the Torah. And according to my Jewish book, it was the most joyously celebrated festival of the year. Okay. So this Thanksgiving type holiday was very festive and singing and dancing and fun. And I'm sure it was the kids' favorite holiday. Okay, questions? Oh, before we quickly do New Testament in 4 minutes. Questions? Okay, so there's a lot of ways we can tie the feast to Christ, but we are just going to do the three big ones. Okay, so Passover or unleavened bread, right? This is when God provided redemption, freedom from slavery. Can someone read for me 1 Corinthians 5:7, please?
Cleanse out the old leaven that you may be a new lump, as you really are unleavened, for Christ our Passover lamb has been sacrificed.
Okay, so here it specifically calls Christ the Passover lamb, and it's talking about leavened and unleavened, right, for the Feast of Unleavened Bread. So Christ was the fulfillment of Passover, and that's one of the most obvious correlations we see that, right? Christ was crucified at Passover, and he is our perfect Passover lamb. There are scriptures that says not even a bone of his was broken, right? And you were not to break the bones of the Passover lamb. So there are many correlations between Christ and Passover lamb. Okay, Pentecost. Okay, here God has provided you harvest. You give the first fruits to God with the hopes of more to come. Pentecost, we know best from Acts 2. Can someone read for me Acts 2, 1-4, please?
day of Pentecost arrived, they were all together in one place, and suddenly there came from heaven a sound like a mighty rushing wind, and it filled the entire house where they were sitting, and divided tongues as of fire appeared to them and rested on each of them, and they were all filled with the Holy Spirit and began to speak in other tongues as the Spirit gave them utterance.
Okay, so the Holy Spirit comes on Pentecost. This is the birth of the church, which is the first fruits for Christ. Okay, Christ was the first, rose from the dead, and now he is saving for himself the church. Okay, and we are waiting, right? We are waiting for Israel to come back. Because if the rejection of Israel meant the ingathering of the Jews or of the Gentiles, how much more will their salvation, right? So we are waiting for Israel in the tribulation to repent and come back to Christ. And then that's when we'll get the millennium, when the Jews are finally in the fold again, okay? Booths. This was the completion of the harvest, thanksgiving for the harvest, for God bringing them out of Egypt into the land, okay? This is actually future. The fulfillment of Christ and booths is future. Let's go to Zechariah. It's actually the very end of the Old Testament. Zechariah 14. Not the very end. Very end of Zechariah. Almost the very end of the Old Testament. Zechariah 14. Okay, verse 9 says, "And the Lord will be king over all the earth. In that day, the Lord will be the only one, and his name be the only one." Okay, so we are talking about the millennium. That's the context of this passage. The millennium, when Jesus is king. Okay, can someone read for me verse 16 to 19? Zechariah 14, 16 to 19.
Celebrate the festival of booths. Should any of the families of the earth not go up to Jerusalem to worship the king, the Lord of hosts, rain will not fall on them. And if the people of Egypt will not go up and enter, then rain will not fall on them. This will be the plague the Lord inflicts on the nations who do not go up to celebrate the festival of booths.
Okay, so we are talking about the millennium, when even the nations are going to come and celebrate the festival of the booths, and if they don't, there's punishment. Okay, because remember, when Jesus comes, sets a millennium, there's still sin in the world. Okay, we're not going to all just automatically be perfect. The festival of the booths will be celebrated again. It will be celebrated in the millennium when the Messiah is actually dwelling amongst man again.